I was the foreperson on a jury for like 3.5 days. We could talk about
really?
That. Really?
Yeah, yep. Let's do that.
Now, I thought there were supposed to be like 13 people, not 4.
Well, there, oh, no jokes. Snap.
There's a follow-up article and some other stuff. So, unless you had anything other than the jury thing.
I've been playing Xenoblade Chronicles 2.
Ah,
that... Oh, yeah, you have. Oh, I beat that game. Now I can't, because I wanted to. Andy told me we're going to be potentially talking about that one after. And
I'm only
spoil
like,
it,
I'm only in like
spoil it.
Chapter 3, so I'm not very far. I really have had no time really to play since, yeah, I've been locked in a jury room.
I rushed to finish it because Andrew was telling me that we were potentially talking about it. And
that seems like the kind of game that's going to take me months. So,
look, 20 hours
hold
on
the
game clock.
Why don't we just do this? Episode 87, we already started. Talk.
Oh, well, I should hit record then before we do that.
Okay, start over.
Okay, whatever works.
This is We Were Gamers. This is Andrew. That's JJ. We have Ryan on.
Hello. Ryan.
I think this is airing in the new year. I think it's official.
Well, Happy New Year's.
Yeah, I think that's how this schedule works out.
Sure. So, Happy New Year to everybody. How was your 2018 started out?
It's been amazing. I've done so many things.
It's a pre-recording joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. The only thing that I do know that is happening as this goes up is probably AGDQ is going on.
Oh, we should just knock that out right away. No, we're going to be a week ahead of time. We're going to do this on time and early. PSA at the beginning of the pod. This cool thing we talk about every year, awesome games done quick, charity speedrunning events, where they break games and they stream for like over a week. They're going to do it starting January 8th.
Okay. So watch the whole thing. You got time.
Yeah. Spend some time, cough up some cash, enjoy video games for a whole week on Twitch. There you go. PSA over. Back to Xenoblade 2.
A game which I have put maybe like less than 20 hours in or something. I am in chapter 3. I've been running around, like fighting monsters and doing side quests mostly. I don't know. The game is, there's a lot in that game.
Let me really quickly warn you. There is a horrible bug if you're someone like me that cares about this type of thing. Close your software after you save and turn it off.
Okay, I generally do that anyway.
Okay, yeah, there's a bug where if you save and then put the switch to sleep, the game clock keeps going.
Oh, so it would just show hilariously high times, yeah, all the time? That's actually really funny.
Unfortunately, that's not my excuse for my high game time, but...
No, your excuse for high game time is actually my fault, probably.
Yeah, 100%. I skipped so many side stuff to rush to finish and still ended at 120 hours.
Look, okay. Well, we'll just do it. We're going to make the time. We'll split today. How is Xenoblade?
It was really good. I was really hoping we'd have a completion conversation, but now I can't do that at all.
It's not my fault. I don't know. I can't run the game, so it's JJ's fault.
It's JJ's fault for playing the game entirely.
I mean, I would not want to... I guess, I don't know, I don't particularly mind spoilers. I already know some things that happen near the end of the game, but also, like, I don't know, the game is like 120 hours. I feel like there's enough to talk about in terms of just, like, how insane the battle system is, and, like, the ridiculous stuff of, like, the blades where you have these, like, I don't know.
The Pokemon?
The Pokemon, yes, I think that's a good way to describe it.
There are Pokemon in this game?
Yeah, the combat system is you get these weapons, but the weapons are actual people that like lend you their physical weapon in combat.
So like the summon feature from Bravely Default?
Or no. It's like they're like magical beings who live inside swords and axes and spears and stuff. And then they give you powers that you use in battle, but you collect them like Pokemon. Essentially by holding crystals really tight or something, and then these weapons with people in them explode out. And you can trade and swap them around like Pokemon, and each one has like a trillion different statistics and different magical abilities that they can use and finishers and their whole own skill chart and a bunch of different
stuff.
It's a lot.
Like, there's like the basic ones that are just whatever, but then there's like 53 unique rare ones that you can get either from story progression or special hidden quests or randomly unlocked that all have their own in-depth weapon chart and affinity chart to level up. And then they all get their own special cutscene and special story quests to go through. It's ridiculous.
It is a lot.
Are there gym trainers?
No.
No.
No, no, that's about the only Pokemon similarity there is just the collection.
And then you literally get them through like Japanese mobile game style. Like, here's a bunch of rare crystals, and those have a better chance to open a blade, is what they're called, of a certain type, and you can use boosters to increase your likelihood of getting certain types of ones.
Just be thankful this game wasn't made by EA, or else you'd have to pay for those.
Yeah, it is all free, you know, like within the monetary system of the game, you can get these cores through fighting monsters or whatever, and then use them to gain these blades. But it's, I'm not very far into the game, but it seems like a lot.
I'll tell you this now, it's something I would have liked to know. Try not to, at some point during the story, you'll get specific like core crystals for a specific blade that eventually will awaken that you can be able to use to guaranteed get that blade. Hold off on doing that until you get random rare blades, because it definitely seems like there's a diminishing return rarity curve on getting rare blades, where it gets significantly harder the more you have.
That's good to know. Okay. I did get one rare one so far.
Which one? Which one did you collect?
It was a Boreas, I think. It's a like giant. It looks like Baymax from Big Hero 6.
That's awesome.
Oh, is that the ball one that I keep seeing pop up in the silhouette that I've never got?
I don't know. He is kind of ball-like. He's a water guy. And the only thing I know about him is he has a skill that increases the amount of salvage you get when you do that, which seems nice.
Oh, yeah. That's nice. Yeah.
Okay. So there you go. But that's the only one I have so far out of opening like 20 or whatever.
So you're 20 hours into a game. And
they're still giving me tutorials sometimes, which is the best part. Yeah, yeah.
I literally got a tutorial like before one of the final battles for a new feature they added at that point in time.
Is that good?
So the tutorial, at least that I got, the most recent one, was in near the beginning of chapter 3. I got into this fight and it taught me about stuff. But the system had already existed and I could have taken advantage of it. I just hadn't been because I didn't really care or there was no reason to, but they were then tutorializing it at that point.
I think it's a lot, like, I know the complaint people have about that type of thing, especially when you compare it to something like Final Fantasy 13, where like the combat system was literally being gated to you until you were like 20 hours into the game. But yeah, these tutorials are different because while the battle system is basically based around auto attacks, it's deceptively complex. And if you don't know what you're doing, you're going to get steamrolled at any point in time.
Unless you just massively grind to outlevel everything.
Right. I'm assuming
every JRPG, there's some sort of, you know, like grind on random encounters and stuff like that.
No,
but you definitely don't need to do that.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think I ever spent time specifically grinding in the game. Okay. What they do though is like the main way you get ahead, or you normally would get ahead in this type of game, get ahead of the curve, is by doing side quests and stuff. But what they specifically do in this game is all the experience you get from side quests or merc missions, which you unlock later, which is where you spend your blades on little missions, but all that experience gets stored in a bonus experience pool, and you don't access that until you rest in an inn. And you can choose to spend the experience at that time or not.
Yeah, so that was the thing I thought was really cool, is that you can choose, right? So when you rest at an inn, there's other reasons to want to rest at an inn. You can change the level of the tides and stuff also. If you want, right, you can choose to cash in as much or as little of that experience as you want. So if you've done a bunch of side quests, you really get items and stuff for them a lot of the time also. And you get those immediately, but the experience and stuff gets held off until later. And then when you rest, you can choose to cash in all that experience at once and level up like four times or something. and then all of a sudden become much stronger at the drop of a hat right as you move into, say, a new area or something.
What's the benefit, though, of not just leveling as you go?
Well, then you don't out-level the content.
Yeah. You can make the game as hard as you want it to be.
Right. So if you know the enemies in a certain area are like levels 12 through 15 or whatever, then you don't need to. If you've done all the side quests up to that point, maybe you would be like level 19 and those enemies would pose no challenge to you whatsoever. Well, you can intentionally hold yourself back.
Enemies have a static level. They don't auto level to you like most of these types of games.
Traditional Xenoblade games are you walk into an area and you're like, oh, that's cool. There's a level 12 rabbit and you turn the corner and there's a level 81 guy that one shots you.
And that happened to me almost immediately getting into the first big open area. I was fighting like a level 7 wolf and I killed it and everything was great. And then I turned around and like a level 81 guy runs up behind me and murdered my party. It was Xenoblade.
Xenoblade likes doing that. It's kind of the artificial gating on the giant open world, you know, so you can't just necessarily go everywhere instantly because you've got powerful monsters in your path.
Okay. And there will be like areas where you could very easily avoid that level 81 guy if you knew where he roamed, right? Mm-hmm. And there'll be obvious areas like, oh, there's like lower level guys over here. And as you walk towards the back of that area, they start getting higher level. And then it kind of goes up a hill and that hill changes to different types of monsters. And those ones have higher levels. And like there's kind of a progression around the zone if you want to try and follow that stuff. But also, you don't have to. I mean, the game isn't forcing you a lot of the time to go everywhere. There's tons of places to explore and not necessarily a reason to go to all of them right off the bat.
The maps, even though this game is very, very linear in sense of, you know, you're following the story and the path, every time you get to a new area, the maps are sometimes too gigantic. Like, I go back to areas after, you know, coming back to them like three chapters later, and I come back and I find this little alcove that has a rare chest that I never saw the first time.
Yep. And a lot of times you'll be walking around and come upon chests out in the field that you don't have the proper skills to unlock yet. You have to collect different Pokemon with different skills to open them.
Oh, yeah.
Or higher level skills in some cases.
Yeah, there's lots of blade swapping for that.
This seems like a game that is ripe for the old GameFAQs style.
Oh, I literally sat down and I was like, I can't remember the last time I had to worry about this many little details in a video game, and I loved it. I mean, I grew up on this type of RPG stuff, just grinding little details, like spending hours in menus trying to sort out inventory and stuff.
Yeah, there really are. Like, if you really want to get into it, there are a lot of little details. But I think you can get by, at least through the main stuff that I've done so far, without deeply engaging with all that stuff all the time.
Yeah.
If you just want to like run around, you don't need to open every chest. It's not like that's going to be a critical thing. All the side quests so far are nice, but like I said, since the experience is kind of optional, you don't even need them if you don't want to. The stuff that has taken me the most time is like collecting a lot of the weird ingredients and stuff that it has. Oh, I need like 8 of these specific type of flowers. So you have to like run around a certain area to get the flowers, then fast travel back there to get them to respawn and do that over and over.
Have you played previous Xenoblade games?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so how much better is the collection system, though, than the previous one?
Well,
the
previous two. So at least this one is a lot better than the first Xenoblade Chronicles game, because fast traveling respawns the point, which didn't do in that game.
And there's more than one point at the node. Oh, my God. Yeah, I didn't play the first one, but I played X, and like X is like, you need to get this specific item, but it only spawns in caves at nighttime during rain.
Yeah, X has a lot of really weird systems like that, and the first one does also, but I don't think there's like the weather limitations. There are weather limitations on enemies in that first game, but I don't think there were. Actually, there probably are in the second game also, but the items I don't think change during the weather.
And they did
the
nice thing where they let you have the time changer in game whenever you want also.
And they had that in both of the previous games as well.
Oh, did they?
Yep.
I guess I didn't get that deep into X then, I guess.
Yeah. it turned out to not matter like 95% of the time in the first game. And it was useful sometimes in X for like certain, meet this person somewhere at night. And you have to like dig into the menu to find the thing that advances the clock to whenever you want it to be. But yeah, it was I don't know. They were there, but they were never essential. And so far, they don't feel very essential in this one either.
For a game with heavy menuing, do you find yourself kind of despising the Switch for all that type of stuff rather than a PC, or did they do a good job?
They did a good job for the most part, except for the map. And I know that they're having...
really, really annoying.
They're supposedly having a hotfix sometime soon that actually is going to fix the map. Because the only map is the fast travel menu, and you have to go through like five menus to get to the map you're currently on, and it's just awkward.
Yeah, there's no hot pop-up.
No, but which they're apparently adding. But
mini map in the corner is either it's either not there. You can have it be the little normal circle in the corner of the screen, or you can have it be like Diablo style, big in front of you, where you can sort of see through it to the people behind you.
Uh-huh.
But that big one, which you think would be very useful, is completely useless because it's so zoomed in that you really can't see anything useful in that mode.
Oh, that's not good.
So that's just because the maps are so goddamn big.
Right. And so then you can't see anything useful that way. If you put it in the little circle, well, it's really small in that little circle, and so you can't really see anything there. So like none of the mini-map modes are very useful. And so, yeah, if you want to use the regular map, you go into a menu and then it says, you know, there's a little icon on where you are, and you have to drill down three times to figure out where on this continent you are and then which part of this continent. And then you look at that map and look around to find your little icon. Mm-hmm. It's a hassle. And all it needs is when you open that map menu, it just goes straight to where you are right now. If it did that, that would alleviate like half of my complaints, at least.
Yeah, it sounds like they're adding a button where if you press X on like the skip travel menu, it'll take you immediately to the current map you're on.
That's desperately needed. But otherwise, I'm really enjoying the game. The game is extremely anime, but so were those other two games. So I sort of knew what I was getting into here.
I don't mind the art style in the sense that like comparing it to the game I had played with X, where it's running the exact same engine as X, you get so much more expressiveness on the characters with this art style compared to the blocks that were the X characters.
Yeah, and I don't even necessarily just mean the art. There is a lot of anime-influenced art in this game as well.
Don't worry, there's a bathhouse scene.
I'm sure that there is, because this is like every anime trope that you can think of is in this game.
Yeah.
People get, you know, make like dumb faces when people express like, you know, remotely sexual comments. People, you know, make bad faces at each other and get hit for saying inappropriate things. And, you know, we're talking
like Dragon Ball anime.
Yeah. There's a lot of like yelling and saying like, I'll get you, and powering up almost. And yeah, there's a lot of that. It's extremely anime.
Yeah,
I will say
but
this. Though,
so were those other games, you know, at some level, and I kind of knew what I was getting into.
I mean, I still, this is probably one of my favorite RPGs I've played, especially in a long time.
Ever?
I would put it on like a top 10 list.
Oof. Wow, and it came out this late in the year too.
I haven't played the first one, but I need to now with how this game ends.
You should play the first one. The first one is a really good game. I recommend.
Oh, interesting.
If you have the ability to rip that and play it on your Dolphin emulator, there are HD texture packs that help.
I'm desperately hoping
we're getting a direct 60 FPS.
We're getting a direct that announces the virtual console for the Switch, and this is part of it.
Yeah, it's got to be a launch title, right?
I wouldn't hold my hopes.
They added it to the virtual console for the Wii.
Oh, it's definitely on the Wii U.
Wii U or something? Yeah.
It's on the Wii U virtual console.
So the first game was remade for the new 3DS.
Right, but I think afterwards they may have put it on the virtual console for the Wii also. But I'm not 100% sure.
It was a game that was on the Wii, so you could play it on the Wii U by going into Wii mode and playing it there.
I'm pretty sure he's right that it is downloadable on Wii U.
I'm sure.
At least on the 3DS, I know. It's the new 3DS. You got to get
now,
the new
you
one.
Say, you're saying right. You finish the game and you have to go back and play the first one. I don't want to spoil stuff. So I'd always heard that the games were like super disjointed. So are they circling back around?
You don't
here?
Need to play the first one to play this one, but there is a huge payoff if you played the first one. that I at least was able to understand. It basically does what you wish. No one heard that. It basically does what you wish every Final Fantasy game did back in the day when you were a kid and somehow connected.
Sweet.
Well, I look forward to getting to that in like 3 months' time.
I will say this, though. The game has probably the single greatest feature I've seen in any RPG, and that's the ability to buy shops.
Buy shops?
Yeah. So, like, normally when I play an RPG, it's, you know, if you know what you're doing with the combat and stuff, they're not that hard. So you never end up using your money for anything outside of buying, you know, the weapons and armor type stuff, right? You know, the typical stuff.
Yeah.
And there's all the potions and junk that just never get spent. But this game has a system where if you buy every item out of a shop, you can then buy the deed for the shop.
Mm-hmm.
And the deed gives you some permanent buff, like 5% run speed or decreases enemy aggro range or something like that that helps you out in game.
Oh, okay. Because I knew you could, I think you could buy shops in like the Fable series because you could end up buying up property in those games.
So this is a lot less like buying the shop. The shop still exists. You can still go buy things from it. They still take your money away. It's not like everything becomes free.
Okay.
But if you have purchased one of every item that that shop sells, and their inventories expand over time, so like the first time you go there, it may not even be possible to do.
Oh.
And then once you have done that, they sell this deed, this permanent item that you can buy that goes into your inventory and gives you some small thing, like Ryan is saying. You can get 10% gold earned or 5% move speed or whatever. And there's a ton of them, and because there are an insane number of shops in this game. There's like a shop that only sells greenery. There's a shop that only sells meat. There's a shop that sells weapons. There's a shop that sells chips to upgrade your blades. There's a shop that sells cylinders to do your salvaging. There's a shop that sells paintings. There's a shop that sells instruments. I'm not joking. Those are all real shops.
I was legitimately struggling money-wise in the early stages of the game because I was spending so much money buying everything from a shop.
Yep, and I am in a similar spot where like I spend all my money on buying stuff from shops, and then I have to like save a little bit so I can buy a bunch of things, go do salvaging, and then I salvage a bunch and get my money back up, and then I go immediately spend it all.
It's giving me light anxiety. Do they kind of like organize them so you can find them all?
No.
Or is it one of those things?
No.
You got to like find them in the world and who knows where the heck they are?
No. The shops are all localized in town. So there's nothing like out in the world or anything that you need to find in that.
It's not going to be like hidden like that, but it is definitely like they're not going to tell you when their inventories update. They're not going to tell you that you need to go back and buy more things from ones in this place that you aren't at anymore or something like that.
Yeah, there's certain triggers outside of just progressing the main story that cause shops to get new things in them. And so you have to be paying attention for that type of thing and go back to the shop and then buy it. I loved the little mini game aspect of it. That was like, oh my God, I just got this item that had this one shop, just get a new item in stock. I got to go check it out now. And hopefully then I can buy the shop out.
That's awesome. Because like you said, you never really use all your cash to buy things out. I kind of did in my recent RPG foray because they had decent weapons and hats. But other than that, it was like not necessary. I kind of like that they do that, and that they also thought about those end game items. I mean, it's every RPG that you go through, and at the end of it, you're like, oh, well, I never used that HP booster or that mind booster or whatever. You know, I saved it all game and then never even needed it. But it sounds like they also thought of that and said, here's these end game items. Make sure you save them because of this rarity thing with the blades or other reasons, right?
Yeah, in a way it's kind of like a hidden tutorial to get you, because these items that you're buying actually are important and give you, it's basically, even though they're, you know, like they say it's like a book or it's a painting, they're basically the same thing as a food buff you put on your character.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives you some sort of temporary buff for like 30 minutes or something. And so it's a way to get you to see all of those and make sure you're paying attention to them to get them to use them and stuff like that. So it's kind of like hidden tutorial system to make sure you're paying attention.
And then on top of that, different blades and different people like different ones of those things, and you get bonus, you know, bonding points with your blades if you use ones that they like or ones that you like. So like, oh, this person really likes drinking tea, and if you give them tea items, they will, you know, you'll get extra points for using ones that they like. or this cat really likes meat, so you have to give it meat ones.
It's not. It's so more in depth than that too. It's where they have two favorite categories, so their two favorite categories of things could be books and drinks, but then they could have a favorite painting that you just have to find this one painting out of the hundreds in the game that they like the most.
Right. And so it's all this stuff where, like, you have no, there'd be no way, like, it's an insane amount of, like, customization in a way, but also, like, kind of a rabbit hunt, like, a needle in a haystack problem. Because, like, if you don't find the thing that they love the most, not a problem, right? Like, it's not going to affect you. There's many other levers and knobs and dials to tweak in the combat and everything that having that tiny little extra edge, not important.
It goes such a long way, though, in the sense, because these blades are your weapons, right? But every single rare blade has its own favorite food and favorite, you know, drink type of thing. And it gives them all, it flushes out this personality of these individual characters that are, should just be throwaway weapons, but instead they're like these full fleshed out characters.
Right. Weapons you might not have ever used because you found another rare blade that you like using better, right?
Right. And oh my God, it's stressful, man. Like, if you open a rare blade on one character, it's a hefty price to transfer it to another one if it's a weapon type that you want on a different character.
Wait. So like, you open blades per character? They're not just a party thing?
The individual character opens the blade, and then it's bound to them. So if you get like a healing type blade that you really wanted on the character you have set up as a healer, you have to transfer it over, but the item to transfer it over is super rare, so you have to cautiously think about what you're doing when.
Oh my.
Yeah.
If you have any slight anxiety, this game may not be for you.
Yeah, the only rare blade that I got very luckily was a healing type on my healing character. So I lucked out on that one. But yeah, he is right, and I've read stuff on the internet about people saying the items that you can use to transfer blades between people are insanely rare. There's like a very limited number of them in the game. And it's not like you can buy them from a shop and they're just expensive. There just aren't. There's only so many, and that's all you get.
Well, I think in Bravely Default, since we just talked about this recently, there's a ring and there's only four of them, right? And too bad if you sold one.
There is technically a way to get more, but it's kind of tedious farming or luck based. But yeah, but I mean, it's just, I haven't played a game like that in so long. I missed it.
And how many hours did you clock out at?
I clocked out at technically 130, but I'm calling some of that, you know, the game clock bug I found. So 120.
Well, I mean, then you got to add in how many game overs.
I don't think I ever game overed.
You don't game over when you die. They just respawn you back at the last checkpoint. So even if you die in battle, it doesn't actually game over.
So
you.
Your game clock keeps running.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Which is very useful for running past super high level enemies to get to spawn points for items that you're looking for.
Right on. Well, do you feel a little bit better there, Ryan, getting a little?
No, because I'm mad that JJ's starting to play it, so I can't just spoil everything.
Oh.
it's all his fault.
Sorry, I guess.
I was trying to put your hours to good use. Speaking of hours, I have a lot of time on my hands because I finished Bravely Default, which we talked about two episodes ago. JJ, I didn't mention to you that I did actually beat that final boss, by the way.
Oh, you got there.
Yeah.
That's good.
Ryan, did you finish that game?
I played the demo.
Okay. I'll do a non-spoiler admonishing of you here, JJ.
I think it's okay to spoil it. I think I'll be okay.
This is like a 7.5 or 8-year-old game. I think it's all right.
I don't
need to spoil a whole bunch of stuff, but JJ, you didn't tell me that there's like a whole movie you get for beating that game.
That
is basically like the intro to the next game.
I mean, I don't want to spoil everything for you, Andrew.
Well, we sat there I don't think you need to. You know how the game, you know, goes.
I mean, you do, though. You do know.
Yeah.
Right? Did that movie really tell you anything momentous?
Yeah, it tells you kind of a little. I mean, like, look, you don't know what happened to Tiz unless you finish that thing, right?
Yeah, okay.
Like, some stuff happens to Tiz after that it's kind of important for the next game. So
I don't know. I didn't play the next game, so.
Oh, well, anyway, even if you didn't, some stuff happens to Tiz after that stuff goes over.
Right, 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 right.
I'm glad I did it, and you know, whatever. That game's over. We don't need to talk about it anymore. But I do have plenty of time on my hands, and it's awesome. I did not realize. I mean, Ryan, you're gonna go through this now. Your life is gonna change. You're not playing a JRPG anymore.
No, you don't understand. I gotta go do all the after game content next.
Wait, what? Oh, there is a new game plus, by the way, for Bravely Default, JJ. We answered that question.
Okay.
Yeah. I think you keep your jobs. So is there new game plus or is there after game content? What's the difference?
No, just typical RPG after game stuff with higher level enemies that show up and stuff like that.
Got it.
The previous Xenoblade games had this also where they did not really have a new game plus, but after you beat the final boss, it will dump you back out to the checkpoint before the last one, and you can just fast travel anywhere you want because the game will let you fast travel anywhere you want almost any time. So, and then there are bosses and monsters all over the world that are like way higher level than the last boss.
Right on.
And sort of like challenge stuff to go do if you're interested in that.
Well, I got some time to read some books, not have to boot up my DS, although I did to play a different game, which we're not going to talk about this week. I did have time, though, to try out something I promised to try out, and ostensibly the reason we invited you on, Ryan. I tried out some Hearthstone.
You actually tried it out, as if it's on your computer or mobile device.
Yeah, it's on. I put it on my mobile device because after that BlizzCon demo, I wanted to try some dungeon runs. They're fun.
They're very fun.
Really fun. And some of those powers.
Have you completed them all?
No, I have not. I literally. It is now.
What a slacker!
Look, hold on. I'm not back all in on the Hearthstone. Okay. I have no interest in playing the ladder or getting card packs or doing tavern brawls or any of that stuff. But Hearthstone is now the game on my phone for killing, you know, 10, 15 minutes on a dungeon run. Because you can. You just, you know, you boot into it, you got your active dungeon run, and you try it out. See what happens on the next boss.
Dungeon runs are very fun, and they're very different every single time.
You know what, though? I've faced the same four or five on each of the runs, so I don't know how many there are. I thought there were more than that, but...
You sort of learn there's like there are bosses that sort of fall into categories. There's the very first boss, then there's like three or four sets of different ones you can encounter in the first several... No, there's three different ones you can get for the first one.
There's two common ones and there's one rare one you can get for the first boss.
I keep getting the rat.
And then there's like, you know, five or six different monsters and bosses you can fight for the first several. And then there's several other, a different pool to pull from for the last several. And then the very last one, I think there's three different bosses you can encounter.
Oh, okay.
Now, Andrew, you have me worried. Please tell me it wasn't you that was the author of that thread I saw on the Hearthstone subreddit that said I lost to the giant rat AMA.
No. No, okay. You can literally just auto-attack the rat.
Apparently, like, some people lose to him.
There's no way to lose to the rat.
You would only lose by trying to play control against the rat, and you shouldn't do that. If you just hit him in the face, you win very easily with every class.
Yeah. I don't understand. I mean, it was pretty clear up front. You just put stuff down and hit him. Like, he's got 10 health. What are you doing?
I just take pride in knowing you're not the worst Hearthstone player out there.
I definitely have not been able to complete it with all the classes. Not for lack of trying, but some of the classes can be pretty tough if you don't get what seemed like the right choices to me.
I made the decision to go in order when completing them all, and I felt Warrior being the first one felt like the hardest for me.
Yeah, I definitely have not got... I've gotten probably like three quarters of the way or to like boss seven as a warrior, but I've never beaten the last boss. I beat Paladin and Druid quite quickly. Mage took a little bit longer, but I did eventually beat that one. I think that's all that I've actually got to the bottom with.
Plus three spell power on my druid has me pretty deep into a dungeon currently.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, I have a lot of swipes in my deck.
There's so many variable things that I think almost any of them can be valuable on almost any class.
Is the stealth one as good as it looks?
The stealth one is amazing.
That's how I ended up beating Warrior. I got stealth and double health.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense. Just take it until your monsters kill him.
Yep.
I've seen people that have won because it's not just stealth, it's permanent stealth. So your guys attack and then they are still stealth.
Right, yes.
Yeah, so you are the taunt.
Right. And I've seen people win with Warlock who play Mal'Ganis. Yeah. So their hero is immune, their Mal'Ganis is stealthed, they're done. Game over.
Whoa.
And like it doesn't stop them if they have a board wipe or whatever, but a lot of the bosses don't, and then you just hit them in the face with a stealth Mal'Ganis forever and you win.
This is the great stuff. I mean, like I saw some old cards in there that I haven't seen in a long time because I didn't play Wild for a while. You know, like there's all sorts of fun stuff that keep popping up in there.
There are some really amazing things that are in there, like the really broken treasure cards. My favorite one so far that I've seen, it's not actually any good, but it's very hilarious, is I think it's called the Rod of Roasting.
Yes.
It casts Pyroblast randomly at things on the board until one player dies.
Wonderful.
It just keeps casting Pyroblast, and either you die or the computer dies. You don't know which.
Yeah, I played that once, and it brought my opponent to like 2 health and then pinged me 7 times in the face.
Yep, it's random, so there you go. But there are a lot of those that are like really crazy. There's one, I forget what it's called, but it makes all your minions cost 0 this turn.
The Boots of Haste.
Yeah, that's really good in a lot of decks. There's one that makes every minion you play have +1/+1, and even the minions that get summoned and stuff afterwards get +1/+1. That one's really good in a lot of classes. The +3 spell power is extremely applicable to a lot of things. It's just fun. And as you go deeper, you just start seeing more ridiculous things. Have you encountered the Trapped Room, Andrew?
Not yet, no.
Do you want to know the secret to the Trapped Room?
I also know the secret to the Trapped Room, and I don't know if we should tell him if he hasn't.
We probably shouldn't.
Okay, well, don't tell me. I'll encounter the Trapped Room. I haven't looked into any like videos or cheats or how to beat bosses or anything, because there's really no point in that.
And actually, there really isn't much you can do in a lot of cases, because it's going to depend on what cards were available to you in your run. And, you could learn like what the boss has in his deck and what he's likely to do, and that information is very helpful. But also, like, you could just not, and you could, if your run ends because something unexpected happens, well, now you know next time, and go at it again.
Well, given how they've organized it, I have a fear, and the fear is that this is a one-shot deal, that they're not going to be adding on to this, and they're not going to be doing it again, because it's organized in the solo adventures under Kobolds and Catacombs.
I really hope that they get positive feedback and it's something they do expand. And like the one thing I really want to see them expand it right now is to make it so that you can complete your daily quests in it.
Man, that would be so nice.
And I think, like, because originally I was thinking that it needs to have some sort of, like, daily reward or something to encourage people to play it. But it's so fun just doing it itself. Like, I was thinking, okay, you get 100 gold for beating a dungeon run once a day or something. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not going to break their bank. But even that, I don't think it needs it because it's so fun on its own. But I think for the new player experience to be able to go in and kind of learn the way the game works in a sort of broken way, but be able to complete your quest without a full collection there, it would just be so helpful to the new player base.
I mean, without any collection at all. You really don't need any. This could be the very first thing you play in Hearthstone once you get out of the tutorial. Like, you would need nothing. You just get in there. It's free to everyone. It requires, other than looking at the cards before you select them, there's no collection required at all. It just presents you cards.
So what if they just swapped out that little Tavern Brawl tab for the Dungeon tab?
I don't think you should hate on the Tavern Brawl, man. The Tavern Brawl is free card packs. It's sometimes there's unique deck building challenges.
Yeah, it is a...
Sometimes they're duds.
It is a sometimes silly, sometimes fun, sometimes terrible thing.
I mean, I will agree, 90% of the time, or 99% of the time, my Tavern Brawl experience is I log in once a week, get my free card back, never go in again.
Yeah, that wears pretty thin.
Overall. But sometimes, though, there are several that I've found extremely fun. The one where you could only pick like one or two cards.
Sure.
And that your deck was just copies of those. That was pretty cool. Like, what's the most broken two-card combo you can come up with?
So is Dungeon the best thing to come out of Kobolds and Catacombs, or how's the ladder?
I actually think we're like an expansion away from having the best metagame in Hearthstone ever.
You're just waiting for all the Jade stuff to rotate, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, once Mean Streets and Karazhan's gone.
Doesn't that not happen until next year then?
Well, happen April.
That's not
going to
happen until April.
I mean, the metagame's in a really, really good spot right now, minus the fact that Kobolds and Catacombs added a few very, very, very strong cards.
Corridor Creeper says hi. Yeah,
Dr. Boom?
Corridor Creeper is like what Dr. Boom wishes he was.
Wow.
It's a zero mana 5/5. It's like, what do you mean?
You're Dr. Boom, and Corridor Creeper is the guy that she tells you not to worry about.
Oh, man. Oh my. So the meta's kind of shifted out, and there's a lot of Jade that they keep trying to pull back and that's about it, right?
It's not that it's really that there's a lot of Jade. It's just there's a lot of very minion-centric decks right now that are really strong and can fill up a board with like big, powerful threats very quickly. And if you don't have an answer, the game just ends. And it feels swingy in that way, where like things are okay and it's kind of even, and then all of a sudden the other deck has its turn or whatever, and boom, now you're facing down a 4/4, a 5/5, and like a 6/10, and it's turn 6, and you go.
And
like,
a lot of
you
that
just lost.
Like saying, like Corridor Creeper is an incredibly strong card, and like if anything, it's just we've learned that anytime there's a card that has any sort of mana cost reduction, it's going to be incredibly powerful. But a lot of its strength is like the same thing where Prince Kel'Thas is getting its strength in the previous metagame and is still kind of relevant in this one, where Patches is just so strong that like once that card's gone, like that's one mana cost reduction on the Corridor Creeper that's never going to happen again. Or two, technically, because you and your opponent play a Patches because it's so good you have to run it in every deck. So it's once that's like that staple is out of the metagame, everything's going to be a more balanced place.
Yeah, Patches specifically causes a lot of these issues because it allows you to start so aggressively and just build up this huge board. And because Corridor Creeper reduces his cost when cards die, Patches is a 1/1. He dies very easily to a slight breeze. And so, you know, you'll trade him away to kill off their 1/1 or their 2/1 or whatever. And then now all of a sudden your 7 cost Corridor Creeper is down to a 4 and then down to a 2. And now it's turn 5 and you play him for 0. And you just got a zero cost 5/5 plus whatever you were spending the actual 5 mana on.
I'm kind of shocked that given the rebalance with Druid and how heavy handed they might have been there, and some of the, you know, warrior stuff and everything else, that they just kind of left Patches and said, well, he'll phase out eventually.
Well, it's weird. I don't think the card itself is necessarily that broken, other than from like the deck thinning thing standpoint, but it's the way it interacts with other cards. But you could like, it's that charge mechanic, right? It's that remnant of something that they don't want to do anymore. And you can see it in their design philosophy for this last year, that type of thing has gone away, where they've been pushing heavily in another direction. Like, name a strong 2-drop like that came out this year. Like, I don't think you can. Like, that's the reason Prince Kel'Thas is so good, is because there's literally no good 2-drops to run in your deck.
I think there are some. But, yeah, I mean, not in every class, for sure. The Priest one that's a 2-mana 2/2 that gives something else +1/+1 every turn is pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, and then good.
And Priest doesn't really run Patches for that reason.
So it only took how many years for Priest to get a good 2-drop?
Even then, it's a situational 2-drop.
It's a good 2-drop, but it's not good on turn 2.
Oh, interesting. All right. Well,
I like this design that they're going with. Like, I think Angoro was one of the greatest sets they released ever. Like, for what it did and how it worked with coming out of a new rotation and like the way it laid a foundation for sets, even though Elementals didn't work out that well. And Frozen Throne had the Death Knight cards, which all of them are very, very strong in their own right and provide some sort of comeback mechanic.
It's like,
I think the Hunter one's great.
The Hunter one actually has one of the lowest win rates of all the Death Knights.
Really?
It's so, like
Why does actually it keep getting...
I think Hunter's issue, though, was that they didn't have a deck to support it.
Why does it keep getting lambasted on the internet, then?
Well, they had a
because
bug
it's
with
bad.
It.
Wait,
they had a,
it's
they
bad?
Had a bug with
that was
it
what people were mad
where,
about.
Well, no, I think that there's just recently with this expansion, people found out that it was bugged and wasn't pulling any beasts from the new expansion.
Yeah, okay, that's what they were
and
yelling about.
Their comment was basically it would take too long to code it in 13 different languages, so that's why it's not like that. But they've recently decided to reverse that, and they are going to be updating it sometime shortly to actually include all the new beasts.
Yeah. There was a lot of talk there about how they code cards and basically like have to go through text boxes and retype everything and all sorts of stuff. Like they didn't set the game up to auto check keywords. Basically,
well, I think Ben Brode showed it off in one of his like little videos he put up on YouTube once, where he showed how they actually like generate the card text in like an Excel spreadsheet, basically type thing.
Ugh.
And what you had to put in each box to make it appear, and you know, in each section of the card.
Yeah. So you know, I understand as a person who does software, I understand from both sides on this, because every time they add a new beast, right, the number of options is multiplied by every other beast. Every time you add a new one.
The funny thing was, it sounded
insane.
It wasn't an options thing that was the issue. It was the way the text displays
yeah.
based
well,
on
it was because they had to generate a new card with new text based on every single one of those possibilities. And so that was the thing holding them back, right? Because they had to generate a zombie that's a combination of that new card plus every other beast in the game. And then you have to do that every single time. And so I thought their decision to say, hey, it's limited to this sets and before was reasonable.
The community never thinks anything's reasonable.
Well, again, well, it's reasonable, but again, it comes down to they don't put those things on the cards. It's like the people have been screaming about since the game came out. It's like, well, but you didn't make that clear on the card. Right. Oh, well, you have to play the game to learn how it interacts. It's like, well, hold on. You could play the game a long time and not know that you can't pull a beast from this set. You just thought you got unlucky. So it's always about like how they interpret the card and how they know that it works, and then how they, you know, put that forefront on the way out to people for them to see and play.
Yeah. I mean, they should have mentioned, like, they should have said that up front.
Yeah.
But, you know, they didn't. So sure. Here we are.
I mean, even if they said, oh, any standard beast, right? Like from like a non...
Well, standard would include this set, so yeah, that doesn't work.
Standard, sorry, it's a classic beast.
It's okay. They made the right, correct decision. We can all get corridor creepers now from our Rexar.
Woohoo.
Well, that will make him better.
Mm.
I do think he's one of the best DKs.
He is one of the most fun designed DKs and one of the very most fun to play. I don't know that he is like in the card game winning sense.
I'm
good.
Telling you, the issue was last expansion Hunter was just complete trash. Now they actually have some early game and ways to get to playing him, so it'll actually work out.
Nice.
But yeah, so I think what this set did that's really, really cool, and I hope they do it more going forward, is it added a lot of really, really really cool deck building restrictions. So like cards that are incredibly powerful with restrictions. And I know I was talking to JJ about this a little earlier, but the big spell package is just
yes.
So fun to play and everything.
So cool.
So they have these two cards. One is Grand Archivist, who's an 8-mana card that at the end of your turn casts a random spell from your deck on random targets. So in like Priest, you can just run Mind Control on your deck, and at the end of your turn, he'll randomly Mind Control something.
Nice.
Or so you can kind of, you know, tweak it to build your deck in a manner where you have these spells that you normally wouldn't want, but if you get them cast for free, you can put them in there. And so like Priest also runs Free from Amber with it, so you just get a random 8-drop or more at the end of your turn. So you just basically, you oftentimes get a random 8-8 at the end of turn, which is nice, you know, a 4-7 and an 8-8 for 8-mana.
Shucks.
Yeah, the package is really cool, and basically you only run spells that picking randomly isn't really going to harm you that much. because it's like, oh, you play two copies of Mind Control and two copies of Free from Amber, and those are the only spells in your deck, so you're guaranteed to always get a good roll. And they can't target your guys, they can only target enemies. So, if it randomly Mind Controls their, like, low-cost guy, not that big a deal. It wasn't in your hand, you got it for free.
Yeah, and the other one's the Spiteful Summoner, which is a 6-mana card that reveals a big spell, or reveals a spell from your deck, and then summons a random minion of that mana cost. So if you're only running, you know, Mind Control, you're only getting a random 10 drop.
Can those piggyback on each other?
Well,
yeah, I mean, they cost too much to play on the same turn, though.
You run them in the same package, but the Grand Archivist actually casts the spell from your deck. So not only is it, like, revealing it and casting the spell, but it's actually thinning your deck and taking it out of it.
Right, where the other one just shows a card from your deck and puts it back.
But these two cards are really cool. We're just, you know, trying it with every combination of every class. So you make an aggro deck, and then you only run these big spells, so you end up with something like Murloc Paladin with Dino Size. Because it's an 8-mana spell you normally wouldn't use, but then you can play a Spiteful Summoner and get a random 8-drop, and so, like, okay, look, here's my Tyrion. And then it turns out if you have board, cards like Mind Control and Dino Size aren't that bad to have.
Well, the problem with Dino Size, though, is that it can cast on your opponent's minions.
Well, you don't run the Grand Archivist with that one. You just run the Spiteful Summoner. But I love the way, because it's these big swingy combinations that Hearthstone hasn't really had before. It's, you know, okay, you lose the board, the game's over, unless you're running some sort of freeze mage type deck. But this allows you to have this, like, cool deck building comeback mechanic that hamstrings your deck, because, you know, if you're playing it in Priest, you can't run Power Word Shields now or Shadow Word Death, so you're constraining yourself and what you can use, but you're getting this huge payoff for doing it.
And you're still not losing to somebody dropping 20 damage worth of charge.
Right, it's something, yeah, if you lose, it's, you can kind of come back in some ways, unless, you know, you get your charge and then that pulls something else out of your deck.
There is a deck that kills you with charging Doom cards, but it's not, it's pretty good, but still, anyway.
Still there. Okay, well, that's Hearthstone 2017 wrap up, huh?
You could Mind Control and take their thing that gives them all the Doom cards, I guess.
Have we all picked an Overwatch team yet? No? No one's going to watch the Overwatch League?
I mean, is someone going to tell me when it's on? I feel like they need to do a better job advertising that thing.
Sure, it starts in January. You're not on Twitter, that's the problem.
I guess so.
No, yeah, it starts in January. I thought we were all, you know, picking teams, and isn't that what we're supposed to do?
Didn't the preseason start already or something?
Yeah, they already finished the preseason. And
they finished?
Yeah, they finished the preseason.
Oh, man.
AKA the technical malfunction season, right? Like, it was like all they were trying to work out all the bugs, basically. It was pretty good. The production quality's good. You should watch it. I don't know.
I would love to. Someone's got to let me know when it's on. Like, they got to do a better job advertising that thing.
It feels like there's not a lot of hype. Am I wrong?
They're putting a lot of money into that.
They're only advertising it in their one website place, and if you don't go there, you would never know it exists. And I don't go to that website because I have never been to that website before, and I have no reason to go there except for this, which I don't know when it happens.
Maybe we'll
which
see
I don't know
because
I don't go
going.
There.
Like, I feel like you need some TV commercials or something for this thing, because, like, it was like a $20 down payment per team, right? 20 million. $20 million. Not $20, $20 million.
Yeah.
Say, Andrew, you and I can split a team for $10.
Let's split a team.
Let's do it. I assume there's got to be some TV commercials coming. I don't know. Maybe during the bowl games. I don't know.
Like, Super Bowl time. Let's do it.
Yeah. But then the first season will be halfway over at that point. So I don't know. They definitely put a lot of money into it, and the teams seem real hyped up about it, probably because they're, you know, making a living doing it, but I don't know. Okay, well, that answers that question.
Yeah, sorry, I really haven't devoted any time to it.
Animal Crossing's still bad, by the way.
Did you see the thing about the team skins, though, that they're adding to the game?
Oh, yeah, that was pretty cool.
Well, they're adding them to players to get as normal skins.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
But they're putting them in like a special currency. No. And I think the reasoning was because of league profit sharing. Oh, so you allocate the money appropriately to each team.
Okay.
Because it's basically, you know, merchandise.
Got it.
For the team, like a team jersey.
That makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, it just seems interesting. I don't know how people are going to deal with having like a new currency where you have to spend money specifically on this.
I mean, it's still just cosmetics, I guess.
Still just cosmetics, yeah. Still just, it'll be all the skill, like, you know, every team has their home color or whatever that they're adding to the game that you can get for all the skins for the characters.
It's cosmetics.
So it's something like 253 skins they're adding at the drop of a hat.
That's a lot.
Yeah, but, you know, hopefully you only care about one set, right? If a set at all. Because most people,
I guess, you could be like, this one looks really
team.
Good on Doomfist, but this Orisa one looks the best. Got to mix and match.
Yeah. Ugh. I don't know. I don't know that another currency is really that big a deal. Those free-to-play phone games have like 8.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that the idea that them adding a currency is necessarily bad. It's just, you know, another thing.
And it would only be specifically for these things, right? Not for regular boxes or whatever.
Yeah, it's only going to be usable for this.
Eh.
At least Overwatch does loot boxes right.
Hard shrug. I confirmed that Animal Crossing is still bad.
Bad?
Yeah, go ahead and uninstall that game then, and we will stop talking about it.
Oh, the mobile app. Gotcha. Yeah. I was like, are you hating on Animal Crossing, man?
Yeah. No, I'm good. It's bad. And a lot of people hated it. I think that you linked an article, JJ, about...
Yeah, I linked an article a while back from... I forget which website it was, but they interviewed a bunch of game developers and took their opinions about that mobile game. And I thought Yoko Taro, the creator of Nier Automata and the other Nier games, is... response was particularly funny because he always has a very dystopian take on everything.
Yes.
And he talked about how he hated this game so much he now lives to burn down the town and murder all these animals because he hates them.
Jeez.
It was pretty good.
Yeah.
I thought you could, like, didn't even know you could get outside the house. I thought it was only about making the inside of the home or whatever.
No.
And the mobile game is like way dumber. In
the
a
mobile
lot of ways.
Game gives you weird. Yeah, we don't. Yeah, no. We're
don't,
not gonna
let's
do
not
it.
Talk about no. it.
Don't
the
go down that
bad.
Rabbit hole.
No,
the game is bad. Don't play it.
Don't play it.
Mr. Assetti's going to get on your case.
No, no, they're not. Hey, you know, somebody came for us, JJ, and I don't think they knew that they did it.
Okay.
We said the 3DS is dead.
Oh,
didn't we? I don't know. I feel like we said the 3DS is dead.
You definitely feel that way.
Yeah. Kotaku thinks that it'll die in 2018 and that it's still going strong now.
Mm. Okay.
Their take was posted after our take, so I think they're coming for us.
Mm. Well, I don't.
That
I
is
don't
my
think
hard
wrong.
Shrug.
Is that our... Yeah, that should be a new thing for 2018, is the hard shrug.
Eh, whatever.
Wow, did you just hard shrug suggestion of the hard shrug?
Yeah.
No. I'm just saying that's my opinion about the whole idea. Like, I can't get bothered to get worked up about their take on the 3DS. Who cares?
It's a nice system. You know, I sell a lot of my old systems when they're kind of like past their interesting life. You know, my Advance, some of my old Sega stuff. And I think the 3DS and the DS life cycle has been long enough that there are enough games to keep that thing around, you know, just in this drawer in case you ever get bored. You want to look up something old.
I still have my Game Boy SD somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to keep mine around.
Yeah, I don't know. But definitely carrying it around at conventions is dead.
Yes.
Yeah, got to get your Switch, man.
True. We saw a lot of those at BlizzCon, but I guess we have to... end 2017 because this was recorded in 2017 or begin 2018 by mentioning that I have to hang a toilet seat in my house.
Yes, because you are the last place person in our fantasy football league.
So, yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. It was a weird year.
Yeah.
Didn't feel good. It didn't feel good before being in the consolation bracket for fantasy football, and it just kind of continued all the way through now being last place. So I don't really know. I don't have a recap this year. Previous years of fantasy football, I've had a recap, but I don't have one this year. My feelings are complicated. The NFL kind of sucks.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. The year had a lot of bad situations that went down all across the league in a lot of different ways. And, you know, I think the on-field product suffered in a lot of those ways as well. And, you know, it wasn't that exciting of a year for football. So I could see why people would get kind of bored with it.
Mm.
Time for the Overwatch League to strike.
Yeah.
There you go.
Fantasy Overwatch. Oh. You know the acronym for Overwatch League is OWL?
Well, that's a hoot.
We should start the FOWL.
Oh my god, that was the perfect ending line. Well, that's a hoot. Cut. Dang it.
We should start the FOWL. It's not as good as that's a hoot.
Eh.
No. Okay.
There's your moneymaker.
I like the work, but I feel like they may have already registered that idea.
God, I hope.
It's so obvious.
I would play Fantasy Overwatch. We could do it.
I mean, it's set up to work for it, too, because it's the same thing within, you know, you watch any of the league-type stuff, which is always, you know, the top streaming on Twitch.
Sure.
Where people care most about the individual players, not the teams.
Right.
So it's kind of set up perfectly for it.
Yeah, a lot of people know players more than teams anyway, so that would be cool. It's a good idea. Well, starting 2018 with good ideas. Let's keep the thing rolling, right?
Yeah.
I think we're going to have more good ideas coming, right?
Hopefully.
Yeah.
If people want to send us some good ideas, they can send them to podcast@wewergamers.com or get at us on Instagram and Twitter, both at @wewergamers and facebook.com/wewergamers to get all of our updates.
Mm-hmm. Ryan, and, what's your WoW character name so they can troll you?
My WoW character is deactivated.
No.
Oh, I deactivated over summer, man.
How is that not the like leading? Oh man, we gotta rethink this entire episode right at the end. All right, do we have time to start over?
Yeah, redo.
Thanks for being with us here, Ryan, as always, and welcome to We Were Gamers 2018, everybody. Stay tuned for more announcements and more episodes, and welcome to a new year.
Woo.
Oh man, that's a sad woo.
Woo.